That's a great question. So as it turns out, my partner was a 24-hour specialist from California, very light, and he excelled at anything over 8 hours. So for the duration of the stage race, as it went on further and further, we became more and more equal. Mm-hmm. But for the shorter stages and the punchier stages, he had a harder time with that type of power. And so making the top 20, we were 20th in the opening prologue. And considering the quality of the fields there, we were happy with that. But we did a lot of chasing the first couple hours of some of the stages, mm-hmm. and just pushing to the limit. And if we could make that first gap, then we're good for the rest of the stage. So it's an interesting dynamic, because not only do you do your regular pulls, but you're allowed to push as well, mm-hmm. including like in Trans Rockies, I was on a co-ed team, and you could actually put a leash underneath your saddle, and the partner would pull the leash out and attach it to their bar so I could pull them along.
DN Plus One, global yet very local cycling podcast, brought to you by Lowland Cycling. Hi, good day. This is the Lowland Cycling Podcast with your host, Jerry and Jeff. Today we have a very special guest, originally from Canada, has been living in Delaware for the last 20 years, was a winner of the Canadian Olympic Trials in 92, representing Canada on the National Road, Team Time Trial, and multiple track events. But currently, and correct me if I'm wrong, multi-sport type of athlete, aqua bike, triathlons, even multi-stage mountain bike races. Our guest today is Blas Hondas. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jeff, how are you?
Good, good. How are you doing, Jerry?
Good. I'm still recovering from my...
The three of us went on a group ride yesterday for Willowdale, and it was pretty tough, right?
Yeah, well, a little bit windy.
I could stretch you guys out a little bit. It's always good to have a carrot there, right?
Exactly.
Great. Well, thanks for joining, Blair. And for our listeners, can you just give them a background of how you got started with cycling?
Yeah, sure. So this was a while ago. I'm master's now. But I guess I started with a high school event. There were some folks that were in my class that worked at a high-end bike shop, and they were putting on a tour for high school called the Tour de Kelvin. And so that was my intro to it. It was three stages, and I didn't know what to expect. I knew these guys had high-end bikes, and I knew they could speak the lingo. I didn't know what a preem was. I didn't know anything about it, but I was, as it turns out, I was putting in far more miles than any of them, unbeknownst to me. I wasn't doing it for training. I was doing it more for a sense of adventure. So I would go from town to town in my province of Manitoba and just doing some exploring. And that's how I got into it. It was... I guess a circumstance of events where I started off with a small set of races like that, and I didn't even have cycling shorts or cycling shoes. I just used running shoes and running shorts, and I just felt where in the course where I was going to take off and see if anyone followed. And as it turns out, nobody did, and I ended up winning the three stages. And I didn't know what a preem was, so somebody took a preem from me, but that was the only thing I didn't win in my intro to racing. So that got me started. And then obviously when you start going to races, you find out more about races, more about racing. And then I just made my way to the next race, which was a provincial championship. And this was all junior. I was maybe 15 or 16 years old. And that was a very interesting story as well. I haven't had a chance to tell that story to many people outside of Manitoba, but my next race was a provincial road championships. And there again, I didn't really know what I was doing, but I knew I didn't want to be left behind. So I kept on up with the front pack, and then somebody took me out, or maybe I wasn't such a good bike handler. My chain came out of the derailleur, and so I didn't know there was a following vehicle that could help or anything like that, but I didn't want to get left behind. So I jumped on the bike. I didn't have the chain strung through the derailleur. It was dragging against the ground, making a bunch of sparks. It was a little bit hilly, and there was a break. And so me and this other guy was chasing them. And when we eventually caught them close to the finish, it turned into some gravel roads, and two guys slid out in the corner. And that left me and one other guy. The other guy was so excited that he went around the corner too fast, went into the ditch, and I was the only one left.
It was a race of attrition, yeah.
So I had wool cycling shorts and a wool jersey and Beta bikers. And in Manitoba, they have a rule where the provincial champion has to go to national championships. So I had to start training with our provincial team. They told me I had to start shaving my legs, and I had to get proper cycling shoes. And I wore our yellow and brown wool jerseys from our provincial team. And so that was my first experience at nationals. And then I moved on to, from there, there was a big group that came in tied for fifth, and they didn't break it up between fifth and 10th. So I was in that group. And then I went to Tour of Abitibi, which was, as you folks probably know, that's one of the largest international stage races for juniors. And so I got my feet wet a little bit there. And then that's what really got me into cycling. And I knew that I wanted to do that sport.
Wow. That was all within 1 year, huh?
Yeah. That was all when I was junior. So wow. 1 or 2 year period. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
And being from Canada, did you also do ice hockey by any chance?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Fortunately or unfortunately, because now I'm into multi-sport, and it's a lot harder to learn how to swim when you're older than when you're younger. Mm-hmm. But I had the choice of either going on a swim team or playing hockey, and I chose hockey. So yeah, that was my most competitive sport when I was young. And I played for 6 years up until university.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So what was the first team that you were on when you were a junior?
We have club teams and they're sponsored by bike shops. So it was a team called Life Sport, which is now Olympia Cycle and Ski in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and representing our province, Manitoba, at national and international races.
Nice. Did you do a lot of U.S. races at the time, or was it mostly Canadian?
To start, when I was junior, it was just Canadian races. We would go down to Minneapolis for the odd race. But then as I got more into it, first year, second year, senior, we started doing more traveling. And then we had a very illustrious Polish coach who came to our province, and we really started branching out. We went to Florida before Christmas, and went to to Tucson before Tucson became popular for many training camps there and all the races in that area. So yeah, that's where we started really, really developing as much better riders.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you do any racing in Europe then during those days?
Yeah. So my first stint in Europe was with the Canadian track team, actually. That would have been in 1988. Okay. So the team pursuit team was sent to Holland, and we stayed there for 3 weeks racing various stage races, mostly flat, and criteriums, kermesses, and a lot of racing. And that was my first stint, mostly in Holland, a little bit in Belgium in 88. So that was my first taste of European racing. Certainly not my last, but that was the first, cutting the teeth at it.
Right. Yeah.
Get to see a lot more depth there.
Right.
Yeah. How was the difference between Canadian versus US racing? And then, for example, racing in Europe, in the Netherlands, what were the biggest differences?
Yeah, that's a good question. I found that the cream of the crop, the top level in Canada, could compete very favorably in America. The difference is the depth. So beyond the first five guys or so, the depth drops off. Whereas in the US, it's not just the top five guys. You could have, you know, top 30 guys and all competing at a very high level. So the depth is the difference. And obviously it takes it a step further when you go to Europe.
Right. It's just broader, looking at the amount of people that you need to or can compete with at that level. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you look at results. Like, I did the Tour of Texas in 88 and 89, and both Steeda and Walton were winning stages there. And I think Steeda actually won the Tour of Texas one of those years. And so that just goes to show at the highest level that, you know, we do have great athletes too, and can compete with Americans in the American stage races.
Right. Yeah. And back then, was it 7-Eleven had a few Canadian riders on the team, right? And when they were trying their first tour, it was like, seems like both countries were kind of trying to figure out like their, how to compete at that highest level over in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, Alex Steeda was the first North American to wear a yellow jersey racing for 7-Eleven.
What we hear often in with speaking riders in the U.S. that becoming pro, combining it with college, is often a decision point, right? Moving into college, how was that for you?
That's another great question. So for me, I didn't necessarily aspire to make a living out of cycling, because I know, at least in my generation, it was the average pro cyclist in France was making $4,000 a year. And that's not the kind of career I wanted to make money with. But I did want to represent my country as much as possible at the highest level. And so that's what I aspire to. So when I had the opportunity to join the national team, I made sure that I put everything I had into that. And that included taking classes only in the fall, my last couple years of university, so that I could go to training camps and to Europe in the winter and spring seasons. So my degree took me 5.5 years, where it was supposed to take 4 years.
Okay. Yeah. But that's a good combination if you're able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did try to finish off some courses while I was on the road, but I found it much much more demanding. So I just strung it out an extra half a year in the falls. But yeah, as it turns out, I had it was a good decision because those winter training camps did turn into a springboard for me for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. And it was necessary to make some of those spring teams to get selected onto teams to race at the highest amateur level. So that, yes, it did extend my university career, but that wasn't the only career that was interrupted. It was once I graduated, I had an offer from Anderson Consulting, part of Arthur Anderson, to join their company full time to start my professional working career. And so I thought I'd give it a go to be able to do both. And I started in the fall of 89. And 89, I had done the Tour of Texas and the Tour de Trump. And so I got a taste of what, cycling, not only the highest amateur level, but as well professional level was like. But I didn't want to turn down the opportunity. So I tried both. And so I just, I had an arrangement where if I had a chance to make the Olympic team, I would take a leave of absence from the company and continue and pursue that dream.
But that's great because as normally when you graduate fresh out of college, start working for one of these bigger consultancy companies, that's I don't know, 10, 12 hours a day type of jobs.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, absolutely. It can be a sweatshop, and it was for our first contract that we had. And I had to move to Calgary. That's how I ended up in Alberta, and because that's where their office was. And you're right. I thought if I could get out before 7 o'clock at night, that I'd have so much training time to train. It would be a beautiful thing. I thought that was normal for everybody to work 10 or 12 hours. When I didn't have to do that, I had so much more time on my hands.
Right.
But there's one example where, we're putting in a lot of hours to meet our contractual obligations for a system we were putting in. And Track Nationals happened to be in Calgary. And so my coach, Merrick Mazur, I told him, give me a call 2 hours before my event. And so I rode from downtown where the office was to the track and did the pursuit and points race and team pursuit and went back to work after I was done. So yeah, I got to have some continuity there. I didn't have to take any vacation for that.
Okay. Yeah, that's and how much time on the bike did you spend during those days? I guess the weekends were a lot of training and then a couple of hours here and there during the week.
Yeah, and as you know, Canada gets a lot of snow and colder weather, right. And so that made it a little harder during the week. But the benefit was being in Olympic town, because Calgary held the Winter Olympics. There was a beautiful speed skating oval, so I joined the speed skating team there, and I got some great training in with again, it was very similar to team pursuit with the drafting and in our with our team. And as it turns out, when there were our big events were Canada Cups,
right.
So that one of the first ones was in Calgary, and it was early in the season, and I was coming off working full time, and these guys were coming from warm climates to compete with. And the first event was hill climb time trial as the first stage up Canada Olympic Park. And I ended up third in the stage, and they called me the flying businessman because I'd be, have the suit on during the day. Nice. Yeah. And then compete in these things on the weekends to try to keep in touch with the sport.
Right. Yeah. And that's the, and Jeff and I spoke about it previously also, is that sports that are good for cycling, but in the Netherlands there is a huge belief, and I think also proven, that speed skating, you use the same type of muscles and you sit really low, so your upper legs and extending your legs, that's really close to the cycling movement, right?
Absolutely. So much power. It's like doing plyometrics for an hour.
Right.
Staying in that crouch position with flat back, and your quads are burning. Yeah. Although your left leg gets a little bit bigger than your right leg. So
right.
maybe we should be going the opposite direction when we can.
Exactly. Or maybe doing eight.
Yeah. Right.
through the figure eight. It's not so bad with marathon skating because you don't have to go around in circles.
Yeah.
But I know that's big in Holland, but not as big in Canada. There's a Rideau Canal, for example, but obviously the conditions have to be right. So you don't have chipped ice.
Back in the 80s, without the smart trainers and having to train inside because of the weather, like what were those workouts like? I mean,
that's our secret. Again, this coach that came over from British Columbia, Merrick Mazur, he got us like all together. We had more people doing turbo training sessions in gymnasiums than would come to group rides in the summer.
Wow.
So it was all on turbo trainer, magnetic turbo trainer, and he would simulate the workouts that we had to do on the road on the trainer. So we were up to 4-hour sessions on the trainer. Probably one of the reasons why I don't do it as much anymore. Right. But we came out very fit from doing those sessions, and it was a necessary thing to do if you wanted to be a cyclist in Manitoba, at least.
Yeah, exactly. So you the Tour of Texas and the Tour de Trump in 90 or 89 and 90, that thing that you left there. Yeah.
Yeah, so 88 Tour of Texas, and then a bunch of stage races in Holland, and then that was with the track team. In 89 I was with the road team, and that started off with Tour of Texas and then Tour de Trump, and then in 90, and then Tour of Guadeloupe later in the season. And then I went to work for Anderson. So I didn't have any international races in 90, but 91, we had this selection set of races after a training camp at the US training facility in Colorado Springs. So I got back on the team there and went to Europe for the European projects, and another team stayed in the US and did the Tour du Pont, which ironically is some of those stages is now where I live.
Oh, okay.
Like the Monkey Hill, for example. I would have done the Monkey Hill time trial in 91. But I was in Europe and did the Niedersachsen-Rundfahrt, which was 14 days in very cold, blustery, rainy weather. But again, the best amateurs in the world were there. We went from there to Ruben Grenatier Breton. It is another stage race in France. And from there, we did the Peace Race. starting in Prague, Czechoslovakia, ending in Warsaw, Poland. So very high level racing, very tough conditions. That was very difficult mentally and physically. I counted at the time that I had done more days of racing. So I think I counted 31 races in 35 days, which wow. is more than the tour riders are, mm-hmm. are doing, like Tour de France. When that project was done, it was maybe 4 or 5 weeks, and we got back, half the team quit. Like, I have never seen them since.
Wow. Just said that's not for me. Yeah.
Exactly. And two guys survived.
Wow.
From that. Yeah.
Wow. That's great. So was it after that you were on 10 speed drive?
No. So there was a couple of guys on the national team, Gervais Rieu, he rode for 10 speed drive. And that's why I know a number of the riders there, but I didn't ride for them. All the international races I did, except for the very end when I was in California racing for Mongoose, was with Team Canada.
Okay. All right. That's when you raced with Scott Price on Team Canada?
Yeah, and Alberta. Yeah, okay. We did a lot of training camps together, and a local Alberta team we were on together, shoestring budget.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of neat how some of these smaller teams, well, I mean, smaller compared to, you know, some of the giant teams back in the day, but how they just had such high caliber of racers and they were able to pull in so many good guys. You know, I mean, even Bart Bowen was on 10 speed drive before Subaru Montgomery. And you look at the names of some of the guys and the races they did and what they were able to achieve. It's pretty amazing. You know, on a fraction of the budget. Did you experience that when you were?
Yeah, absolutely. We used to travel around, this was in Manitoba, in a propane van, trying to make it from town to town, and then we'd run out of propane and have to sleep overnight on the side of the road or at some campground till it would open, because propane powered vehicles were less expensive and propane was less expensive. there was quite a few stories like that, and everybody has to start somewhere. So they're going to come through the ranks like that. And I think everybody has their stories about that. Roland Green, for example, world champion mountain biker, we were on the same team as for Laval in Montreal. We were happy to get our entry fees paid and some accommodation. We're roommates in a few different stage races and so forth. Yeah. So it's just an example of folks coming up grassroots and then through smaller teams until you get some results and then get picked up by bigger teams. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of results, like when you had to exercise that leave of absence with Anderson, did they uphold it? Were they good about that?
Yeah, that actually worked out really well, because I ended up subcontracting back to them from September through December or January each year until 95. When I got married, and then I cut back on the amount of racing I was doing. So I actually, that's how I got into contracting. I did that for 10 years until I, in my permanent position now with BlackRock Financial Management, in 2002. So that arrangement worked out very well. Everybody knew, that the contract was up at a certain point in time. So there was no surprises. Right. And I could make enough money to support myself for 8 months of the year by working 4 months of the year.
Right. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. It was Anderson seemed to be in the heyday, very flexible with that. I met a lot of Anderson consultants over in France, and they were people from the Midwest that just wanted to travel. And Anderson said, great, you can go over, spend some time here, spend some time there. Yeah. So it seemed like that back then that they were very flexible and accommodating for different people.
Yeah, that's the thing. Some people don't like traveling if they're tied down, but with the consulting gigs in your area of specialty, oftentimes you had to travel. So you've given choices, but they wanted people to accept that rather than staying at home.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. When you're young,
right.
It would be fun, right? It's
yeah. That's a good time to do it.
Right. So road racing and on the track, team time trial. So what I remember of team time trial back in those days, especially representing your country, these were 100K long, right? And you would do it with four guys.
Yeah.
How was that?
That was my most favorite event. And I think my best event was the team time trial. I just love being able to go to the front, drill it, and then get for 30 seconds and then get a minute and a half off rather than the individual time trial where it's a constant less power. It just, you can feel and sense within the team who's strong, who's weak, and adjust the amount of time you spend on the front to help the team.
Right.
It just felt for me the perfect event. And that's what I tried to specialize in. We won two gold medals. So two of my national championships in Canada came in team time trial and one came in team pursuit. The team pursuit was the first medal in 91. All with the Alberta provincial team.
Oh, nice. Right.
Yeah. So it's a shame that there isn't more of those events. Then it got taken out of the Olympics. And that was really the end of the national team program.
Okay.
Because that's what we were following at that time. We were shooting for, this was in 94, where we were supposed to go to, my contract in Los Angeles was up in January, and then we were supposed to go to Italy, the team time trial team, to start the season and do stage racing there. And then once it got taken out of the Olympics, that whole program was abolished.
Yeah, and it's a shame because it's such a and I think many more people. It's such a beautiful discipline, right? It just speaks to the imagination. You have a couple of really top notch athletes. The material is. Most of the time the latest and the greatest and just seeing that, let's say, formation going across the road, it's beautiful. But even if you look at the Tour de France or your example on the Olympics, it's not there anymore, and that's a shame.
Yeah it really is. And I think in the case of the Olympics, it was taking up probably a lot of spots, and they're putting in maybe more exciting sports than in endurance sports. And I guess that was the rationale from it.
Yeah.
Do you still get on the track these days?
Unfortunately. So every place I lived prior to moving here, I was within a couple miles of a velodrome. So it was very convenient, obviously great speed work. But since moving here, Allentown or T-Town is an hour 45 away. So it makes it much more difficult. But I have been on the track, thanks to Mike Miller's encouragement. A couple times earlier this year and a couple times at the end of last year. So, and this is again with working on Team Pursuit, right, which I like those team events.
Yeah. That's great. So you mentioned a lot of strong Canadian racers, you know, Roland Green, right, Roger Hajdal, Sven Tuft, right? And why do you think that Canada breeds like these really strong hard men for cycling?
I think if you spent a winter in Winnipeg, you can do anything. Yeah, I think in general, I don't want to put anybody off, but Americans have it too easy. Mm-hmm. Just so many conveniences, and although they have, the Americans have the, such a great talent pool to pull from, so that, you know, overrides that. But yeah, in Canada, I think you can find great talent and harvest great talent anywhere. It's just a matter of developing it. So if there's an opportunity, you will find that, and then that combined with the toughness to be able to survive in some of these sports and the harsh climate is turns out to be an advantage. One other thing is, I think the difference is in Canada being a little bit more socialistic, there's more government funding and there's more development of mm-hmm. athletes. Whereas in America, everybody's left to their own survival mm-hmm. of the fittest, right, and privatization, finding your own sponsors, finding your own way to races, finding your own coaches, trying to afford it yourself. In Canada, we had it good in a way that we had an organization that was looking out for us, looking out for talent, taking us to races, getting coached, and so forth. So there's pluses and minuses of both.
Nowadays, like I said in my intro, you're more into multi-sport and triathlons. And can you talk a little bit about that? What's the driver behind that?
Well, I think it's this. We missed a whole 10 years of development. Well, before I got into that, I got into mountain biking, and it's for the same reason, and cyclocross. Because I like a challenge and I like to do something different. So mountain biking was becoming a very popular sport, and it required technical skills. Being mm-hmm. on the road, it's not as technical. You're not jumping over logs. You're not skidding out. You're not doing sharp climbs over boulders and rocks and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so that intrigued me to see if I could take my fitness from the road to how well it would translate onto the mountain bike. I'm not talking just cross country races. I ended up doing quite a few international stage races on the mountain bike. And these were again with team events. So I did La Ruta de la Conquistador in early 2000s, and starting from one coast, climbing through rainforests over volcanoes to the other coast. Tinker Juarez, for example, was still in the picture there, racing, representing America well. And then I did the Trans Rockies, which was a co-ed team, and that was super fun. Again, being back in a lot of the same terrain and area right. that I used to live in Alberta. And then I did a stage race in South Africa for 8 days called Cape Epic. Cool. Again, with a team event, which is now used by many pro mountain bikers to get used to and get used to mountain biking early on, and for their training camps before their race season starts. So So yeah, I did a lot of that because of a different challenge. And right. then I got into multisport because my family has quite a strong swim background. My wife was a world champion in marathon swimming and swam around Lake Ontario when she was 19 and raised $400,000 for MS and has a lot of swimming accolades. And then my kids obviously followed suit. Swimming is a great sport for young kids. And then she got into, she was a professional triathlete, did Hawaii 8 times, 26 Ironmans. So our whole family then began to do triathlons. And my daughter was the under 19 Olympic distance US champion. And then she did triathlon in, at college in Marymount. And now my son and I are training for Ironman Florida, November 7th. So 6 weeks away.
Nice.
And yeah. And, but before that I did Xterra, which was mountain bike, as opposed to road bike. Cause I had the skills on the mountain bike to be able to take advantage of that in a multi-sport event. And so I did Worlds in Hawaii twice. I was ended up seventh my first year, and I got third at Nationals age group. And but that sport, Xterra, is really attracts a special breed.
Right.
Regular triathlete would never do it because they could never get through the technical part.
Right.
They do it once and never be back.
Yeah.
So it was kind of didn't really take off like road tri and Olympic distance tri. So then I started getting onto the road, and I actually found that that suited me better because of my background on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I could hammer out the watts in the team in the time trial position. And I could gain more time on the bike in a regular road try than I could in a mountain bike off-road.
Right.
And compared to the highest level in the race. Like I can win a time trial on the bike in a road try where I couldn't do that on the mountain bike.
Mm-hmm.
So just fit. Suited me better. So I, that's what led me into, again, another specialty within multi-sport. And I saw an opportunity to win a world championship at something. I thought it'd be great to be a world champion at some point in my life in something.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So when, this, other event came up as part of, the multi-sport, world championships called Aquabike. It's just swim bike, no run.
Mm-hmm.
I started working on my swim a lot, and I combined that with my bike, and I was able to win the first world championship in Penticton in 2017. And then again, last year in Ponte Verde, Spain. And then this year it was in Almere, Holland, but was canceled. So rescheduled for the same time next year.
Okay. So you can bring some stroopwafels and some other.
Yeah.
But that's great. And that, I'm sorry. I indeed skipped a lot because the multi-stage mountain biking is very interesting also, and we talked about that in earlier podcasts, but it's great to hear that you have done, for example, Cape Epic. How was that? Because that's still a huge event.
As it turns out, it's more like four-wheel drive trails. They're not single trails.
No, they're not technical at all. They are more of an endurance power event, which is great for a roadie, But when you're going there expecting you're going to be mountain biking and you don't find anything to jump over, it was a little different, and it's very dusty, but very picturesque as well, climbing the mountains on both mm-hmm. sides, going to the sea to, and then climbing their mountain ranges was very interesting. It was a good challenge, fast racing, definitely. And it was another great dynamic working together with two-person teams. So the prologue, for example, where you have to work out again who's going to pull where and how long and so forth. It was a really good change from just doing the standard road racing.
The team dynamics, were you comparable type of riders or looking at, I don't know, for example, weight to power ratio or things like that? How was that?
That's a great question. So as it turns out, my partner was a 24-hour specialist from California, very light, and he excelled at anything over 8 hours. So for the duration of the stage race, as it went on further and further, we became more and more equal. Mm-hmm. But for the shorter stages and the punchier stages, he had a harder time with that type of power. And so making the top 20, we were 20th in the opening prologue. And in considering the quality of the fields there, we were happy with that. But we did a lot of chasing the first couple hours of some of the stages mm-hmm. and just pushing to the limit. And if we could make that first gap, then we're good for the rest of the stage. So it's an interesting dynamic because not only do you do your regular pulls, but you're allowed to push as well, mm-hmm. including like in Trans Rockies, I was on a co-ed team. And you could actually put a leash underneath your saddle and the partner would pull the leash out and attach it to their bar so I could pull them along.
Oh, it was literally pulling somebody. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're right. Getting the compatible partner that is matches your strength is important.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you want to avoid what I've heard is that somebody, your partner is constantly in the red because then you start making mistake and you crash and that will impact obviously the whole team.
That's actually what ended up happening on the fourth stage. We had just latched on to the group and my partner had hit a crevice and crashed in it and broke his arm. Ugh. He got up and finished, but he couldn't do any more the next day. So I then would partner up with this Swiss team that had lost the partner.
Oh, okay.
So we weren't official, but I got to finish the race with a partner.
Right. Oh, okay. Okay. That's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard some of the teams, like the bigger teams, and I think Specialized had four guys, two teams, and they would try to have similar shoes so that if someone broke a shoe, they could give it to the other, to the lead rider, and similar size bikes. So guys were sizing down or sizing up so that they could swap out bikes, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously they're on the same type of bike so that if they have bike problems, maybe somebody else knows how to fix it. And that's actually what it ended up happening. They had to swap out, I think it was a derailleur hanger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in the middle of the race. And somebody knew how to fix it within their team.
Nice. So given all these different adventures, all these big, huge races you've done, is there things left on the bucket list that you still need to conquer?
That's a good question. I still don't, my number one challenge this year and last year was improving my swim. And, that's still, a challenge and a goal for so far. I'd be happy if I can, keep improving that. So that's my main, focus right now. After that, I'm not sure what might come up.
Yeah.
Right.
Good.
So in November, it's triathlon in Florida. How is that training going? So you're trying to improve on the swim, but obviously you also need to run a marathon. How's the running treating you?
Yeah. So this is in Panama City. So both my son and I, when we were looking at which race we want to do, neither of us like running, and especially running in hills, because the downhills really kill you. Mm-hmm. So we found this race in Florida that's flat.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that's one thing we got going for us. And then the second, obviously, is consistent training. So he goes to school in Tampa, so he's familiar with the weather in Florida, and he swims at a very high level for the university team there. So both of us have this challenge of running, so far so good. Although I haven't approached anywhere near 26 miles in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But I do have a strategy that that should get me through it if it's on.
Okay.
Even if it's not on, we booked a place right on the bike course. We're going to go and do the course ourselves.
Right.
Okay. So far, it's still on, though.
That's great. So speaking of racing, like, how have you adapted to the COVID and like changing goals? And sometimes races are on your calendar and then they get canceled the last minute. So how has that been for you?
That's another great question. I don't think I've been affected as much as most people, because it gives me a reason to focus on my weakness. And I do test sets and time trials every week in the water, various events, so I can see where my progress is or lack thereof, or whether I'm hitting my goals. And I wouldn't be able to concentrate on that as much if I was racing more.
Mm-hmm.
So I've taken advantage of the opportunity to focus on that. And secondly, because all these races were canceled, I created BS a tri series myself, and today was the seventh race in a row. Each Sunday, we've been racing 10 people or less on courses that I found, and that has also been very nice to have low key, low pressure, great training. And even during lockdown, I would get on my cross bike and just do explore without the pressure of whether I was going to be too tired on Sunday to race.
Right.
I could just go out and do these courses, and even on my road bike, like the Savage Century, for example, such beautiful hills on the Susquehanna River that I could explore and just stay out there for 8 hours going my own pace without worrying about whether what my average power is and what my average speed is. And so, yeah, I got to do things a change of pace that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to do. So, I think for me, I haven't missed a beat. Obviously racing gives you that high end, but we get to do that at Great Valley. sometimes on Saturdays, depending on who's there.
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Like, I know people say, oh, it's been tough, but I feel like our group has really been able to use this to their advantage. I mean, our friend Jason Cimini did 100 miles at Fair Hills on three different bikes, right? 33, 33, 33. And it's just, you set your own goals and you tackle those and everything just to stay in shape, right? And it's been inspirational to see how people have taken that and used it to their advantage.
Yes, absolutely. I think it does give you another dimension to look at rather than always trying to peak on a Sunday race or a Saturday race.
Right.
You can just train through this without worry or concern.
Right.
And the advantage of these smaller triathlons that you organize is that you can find your bike easily when you come out of the water.
Yeah. So fortunately, some of the folks that do it with us used to organize triathlons. So we actually have a rack just like you would see in a triathlon transition area.
Oh, okay.
We have one of the parents there on a laptop recording our time. So we get our swim split, our T1 split, bike split, T2, and run split. And we do an awards podium.
Nice.
So it's worked out really well so far. Yeah. And it's, again, very low-key, small numbers, pretty safe.
Well, I know we're at the hour. I want to be conscious of your time. Was there anything that we missed? Anything we should bring up?
Well, I think you, for the hour, you have pretty good coverage of what I've done for the last 40 plus years.
Right. All right. So the one final question. Obviously kind of you have your, let's say, family team, but have you ever, let's say, ventured into coaching individuals or teams? You're organizing a triathlon, but is that part of?
That is a good point. I like to look at myself more as a mentor than a coach. I'll give tips and help people out in many ways, but writing up a training program and doing it properly, calling them every night and asking them about their, how it's going, and then trying to get somebody to peak, that doesn't do it for me as much as some other things, whereas providing an opportunity for people to do this and seeing how they take advantage of it gives me a lot more satisfaction.
Right. Yeah. That's it. There's only 24 hours in a day and you have to prioritize, right? You're let's say very busy with your sports and working at is it your company or at so that's good to hear. Thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed the 40 years in a nutshell and listening and hearing about all your, let's say, cycling and multi-sport adventures. It was really good to hear that.
Yeah. You're welcome. It's been great catching up with you guys.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
See you on the next Willowdale.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Blair. Thank you.
Bye-bye.